Right up, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 172 is on its way. Who's scruffy looking? That's the title for this episode. Howdy, everybody. Portal Game Podcast, a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal. For more information, you can go to www.theportalct.com. You can check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. That's where you will find me, your host for this episode, The Brant, number 172. Also, make sure you check out our YouTube channel, Step Into The Portal. You will see lots of live playthroughs and other things. And coming up soon, you will see us streaming live from the store for Extra Life Day on November 6th. I don't know exactly when we'll be streaming and what we'll be streaming, but you can check that out there. So thanks, everybody, for joining me. It's been a little while. I'm recording this live on YouTube for people who are listening later, and I'm in my attic here now. This is my new studio. I haven't recorded in the studio before, and it's getting a bit chilly in New England. We're definitely starting to hit that full-on fall weather. It's hard to call it winter weather because it hasn't been freezing, but it's a lot colder in this attic, which is not insulated. So I am doing the classic New Englander, the Northeaster, and I am wearing the winter cap while I'm recording to try to keep me warm. I have a space heater here that I'll pull in at some point, try to keep myself warm. I think a space heater would be pretty easy. I feel like being cold is better than being hot, but that might just be me and I might discover things otherwise. I realize I never turned this second light on, so for people watching on YouTube, I am a little dim. That's not my mentality. That's my actual view, but that's okay. We kind of got this like cozy attic feel going on and we're not showing off anything on the table. So it should work out, fine. Awesome. So yeah, like I said, we're doing that Extra Life Day. We'll be open 24 hours, November 6th from midnight to midnight. That's midnight at Friday. We just roll on Friday Night Magic right into being open all the way till Saturday or Sunday morning, midnight, Saturday morning, midnight to Sunday morning, midnight. So if you want to come down to the store, you can. Masks are now optional in Manchester. I will be wearing a mask with all the people there, except when I am streaming. I'm not going to be doing that, but it is a choice that you can make. So those are the things that are going on there. Definitely check out the YouTube channel, like I said. You'll see lots of these games being played live. And this episode, I've got a lot of games to review, so I'm going to review a bunch of games, and then I'm going to run through Gen Con and VonnerCon, two events that I did in the last month. Whew, that's exhausting. And run through all those. I will say, so I know a lot of people know that I am a high school teacher, but thank a teacher if you can, because this current teacher, I'm going to say burnout as kind of the, what do they call that? Buzzword or whatever, but it's not burnout, but the exhaustion. So just the way I'm feeling right now with teaching is how I would normally feel in December when we're kind of getting up to that break. And I don't know, every teacher might tell you different, but usually for me, it's December when it really hits where I'm like, I need a break. You get a short one there, but it's real. So if you have kids, they have teachers. If you're working with teachers, if you are a teacher, thank you. Thank them. There's plenty of people to thank right now, so I am not saying thank teachers only, but definitely be thinking about them. During this time, and if there's anything extra you can do for your kids' teachers, a little bit goes a long way, whether it's a gift card or a note, or just staying extra in communication or seeing if there's something you could do for them. It's tough. It sounds funny, like, well, we were in this pandemic and we were not in the building and everything, and suddenly now everybody's in the building, and it feels really tiring right now. So I will tell you that. Did it lead to me not doing the podcast? No, but it did lead to me pushing the podcast off a week and a half. Just not being able to find a day, and the one day I had, just not having the energy to record this. But I'm still going to keep these monthly. I am actually excited when I can throw in some extra podcasts I'm going to, and I am recording, if the stars align this week, with Carl Van Ostrand, who is a Connecticut native. Carl has designed several games, Kapow, which is under Wise Wizard Games, and probably his biggest game is Merchant's Cove with, I hope it's Final Frontier, right? Final Frontier? Yes. Final Frontier Games. It sounds weirdly like Star Trek, which I think is the point. And then his newest one is up on Kickstarter, Bardwood Grove. So we're going to talk about that and review some more games for you. So I'll be recording that with him. So that'll be another episode with Carl, and I'm looking forward to that one. So, and we'll schedule a few others. Paula Deming is going to be on. and a few other people in the future. So those should be fun team-up episodes that I will do. I like talking. I like talking fast about games, but honestly, I like talking to people. So putting people on the episode is going to kind of be the goal here. All right, less chat, more rock. So let's get to some games that we're going to review here. So first up, I don't have the box if you're watching on YouTube, but hey, if you're just listening, no big deal. So the first game is 10 from AEG, and they were nice enough to supply us with a copy of this game. So 10 is a kind of bidding, push-your-luck game. And so the idea is that you're trying to create sets of cards in, I'm going to call them the four primary colors, which means the primary colors plus green. And you're trying to get runs 1 through 9. For every card you have in a run, so like let's say in blue you only had 1 through 6, then you skip 7, 8, and you had a 9. So you'd only get the 1 through 6. You get 1 point at the end of the game. If you have all 9 cards, you get 10 points. So on your turn, you're going to flip over cards, and they're either going to be market cards or they're going to be regular cards. When you flip a regular card, you can keep flipping, and you bust if your sum is 10. When you flip a market card, that number actually gets subtracted from your total. And so you can kind of flip like a 7 and then flip a market 4, so now you're down to 3, and then kind of keep flipping to push your luck. At any point, you can stop, and you can either choose to take the market cards, in which case you get the buttons that are on them in money, in points, or buttons, I think they're just called, and you can now spend those, and the other cards go to the market, or you can take the other cards and then purchase a card from the market. But when you take the other cards, all the other players get buttons that are on your market card. So you kind of have this choice, and there's a lot of push your luck and choice and decision, which definitely makes the game interesting. I believe it can play 2 to 6 players. I don't have the copy in front of me because I brought our copy to the store. But yeah, it's kind of a neat, interesting little push and pull. It's easy to pick up. It's generally easy to teach. It's got like a little couple extra layers of strategy. More than strategy, it has choice. And I feel like in small games, choice is generally what I'm looking for. Oh no, this battery's going to go. So hopefully this is recording well here. Awesome. We're going to have to pull from here. Hope it'll sound good. Sorry. I don't know why these batteries died. Nah, we're just going to stop it now. Ah, I put these batteries in new. All right, there we go. So, yeah, it gets you lots of choice. It's a fun little game. And then you can purchase the cards in the market for their face value. So if you want to buy a 5, you spend 5. If you want to buy a 6, you spend 6. And you just go around until the whole deck is gone. I think you feed the deck a number of cards for the number of players. So there's sets there. And you go till the deck is gone, and then everybody adds up their points and go from there. So this is from the people that made... oh my gosh. Point Salad. And it's definitely got that kind of fun feel. It's a little more silly. It's a cool little bluffing. Oh, I didn't mention the part. Sorry. It's a bidding game. So you're using the buttons not only to buy the cards, but if somebody flips a wild. So there are wild numbers with a, you know, stationary color. There's a stationary number with a wild color. And then there's just pure wild. And you just go around bidding on those kind of, you know, poker style. I bid 1, I bid 2, I bid 5, blah, 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 blah. You go around until everybody passes and you can buy those ones. And so that's kind of the idea of you can pay for those cards so you can get those extra cards that you need, which is interesting because there's a bunch of those in the deck. So there's a bunch of auctions that come up. And it keeps it really kind of light and snappy, and you get to do things on people's turns. And then the player just picks back up and keeps going with their turn. So that is another part. So, yeah, overall it's fun. I don't know how much staying power it'll have. I mean, Point Salad to me is really good, and I would keep playing that game. I do keep playing that game. And this one seems fun. Like, it seems like a fun game. I would not say no to it, but I don't know that I'd be carrying it around to play with me all the time. But definitely check it out if that sounds interesting to you. That is 10. Let's see. Next up, I got to play Arch Ravels, and that is 2 buried under there, so I'm not going to be able to grab that one at the moment. But Arch Ravels is a game from XYZ Game Labs, and you can check out a playthrough of this on our channel. I played with Kathy, and inside there was a little crochet octopus that you could make, and Kathy made that, and we had that on the screen while we were playing. And Arch Ravels is a game of knitting and competition, so you're trying to knit various things, sweaters, scarves, teddy bears, things like this for people and kind of complete those projects to get points. So on your turn, it's got little worker placement, kind of like Villainous or Scythe, where you move your worker around, decide what actions you're going to do. So you can go shopping and you buy the different colored yarn balls from the center of the table. Or you can, you know, work on your craft and you get so many actions to create crafts with the yarn balls that you have. And that's kind of the idea. You're going through that. Each character has like a little thing they do better than the others. Like this one might get a bonus shop, and this might get a bonus craft, and they might get discounts. And as you flip, there's events that come up. So it might be like the cat stole your yarn ball or whatever, and so somebody loses a yarn ball, or you have to give one to every player or something like that. These events come out, and then there's like special ones that you're trying to knit. And when those patterns come out, you can kind of grab those, and they require a whole bunch. They're unique, but give you a bunch of points at the end of the game. So then you're just going to play through. Is it rounds? Sorry that I don't remember. You're looking. Oh, I don't remember the end of the game trigger all of a sudden. Oh, there's little patterns. So not only that, you have like projects you're working on that are communal where it's like, oh, this person wants two teddy bears and a scarf for whatever reason, right? Kids' toys or something. And when you complete those, you grab them and you trade your other ones in and get points. And when that row runs out of cards, which again is based on the number of players, then the game will end. It's cute. It's a nice little resource management. It's like, I don't know. That's really action selection more than worker placement, but whatever. It's all semantics. And the way the little yarn balls come out, it's interesting because some cards are clearly better than others. So as those flip, that can help out. But it tends to be there's so many coming out, people are buying so many things that it just kind of evens out. But yeah, it's a really neat game. Kathy's super into crocheting and now knitting, so it's perfect for her, like thematically. It's good to see a game that is all about this. And it was neat at Gen Con, which we'll talk about a little bit here later, but they yarn bombed outside, which was just a cool way to kind of promote their game. So definitely check it out. That is Arch Ravels from XYZ Game Lab. All right, man, jump to some newer games. Even though I've got older games to review, because these came to me from WizKids. They sent me a bunch of games. So the first one here, I am uber excited about because I actually gave my super skill pinball away to Eric Summerer because it was hard to find then. And this is Super Skill Pinball Ramp It Up. So this is a standalone sequel. It's really just more boards. You can go back. I wish I knew the episode number where I reviewed. I'm not as always as good at knowing that stuff. But you can go back and see. My review, and this is kind of more of the same. So this one has Gopher Gold, Pin Pals, High Roller Heist, and Top Speed. And all of these focus around a ramp. So if you've played pinball before, there's like the little ramp that you can put the ball in and it goes up there. So in the Gopher Gold, you can go up high, like kind of on the back glass, and there you have like a little loop that you can do to kind of keep looping around and scoring points, and come down one side. And in the High Roller Heist, you're trying to steal things from a casino. I've got that there. And then the Top Speed one, I haven't played the Pin Pals one yet, so I had to skip that one. In the Top Speed one, you're going up the ramp and you can increase your speed, which actually adds to your die rolls. So you're able to roll like sevens, eights, and nines. Because normally you roll two dice and pick, like, oh, which die am I going to use? But you add your speed, and as the rounds go on, you get faster and faster. That one's really neat because it makes the different rounds feel different. Whereas the other ones, the rounds kind of always reset and they feel very similar. But that one definitely makes the third round feel out of control. Like you feel like you're at top speed and you can actually break. So that one's really neat. I mean, this is basically, if you like Super Skill Pinball, it's a no-brainer. And I love Super Skill Pinball. So here's the thing I will say. Super Skill Pinball is at its best at one and two players. At three and four, when you lose a ball, you're waiting for everybody to finish the round. And it takes a while, and the game actually gets really long when you're waiting for everybody to make a decision because I might make a quick decision three times in a row, but then the fourth time I slow down. But somebody else was like, quick decision, slow decision, slow decision, quick decision. So if we don't line up, it just there's always somebody making a slow decision, and especially when you're trying to teach the game. So it's pretty smart to play one or two balls when you're just teaching the game. Just let everybody know that's what you're going to do and go for high scores. And add the other ones in. But man, this is a great solo game. I mean, just think of pinball. Like, it's kind of like that, except for resetting and people play. But it's also good to have some patience and teach people and play with them. But I think you're best to teach somebody at two players and kind of help them walk through it. But this is an amazing roll and write. This is the most thematic roll and write on the market, hands down. So absolutely check out Super Skill Pinball when it comes out. Ramp it up. Thank you, WizKids. And thank you, Jeff Engelstein. For making that because it is awesome. And then this one came out of nowhere. I actually saw this at Gen Con. Will at Gen Con, who works for WizKids, showed me this one and I had requested a copy and it came in. This is Dungeon Scrawlers. So this is based on D&D And the biggest issue they have marketing this game is getting people to realize this is not a roll-and-write game. And not that roll-and-write games are bad, but just it's not a roll-and-write game. So kind of recognizing that will be important in knowing. So what's happening here is you are going through a maze. So everybody has the same maze. And you say, go, and then you're working your way through the maze. And as you get to the maze, you get to different rooms. And you might come across goblin enemies, or I don't know all the enemies from Dungeons and Dragons, I totally should, but you know, whatever it is, you're coming across various enemies, or there might be spells that you need to cast by tracing the spell, and the enemies have to be crossed out, and there's treasure, and you have to outline the treasure to gather the treasure, and then eventually you'll get to a room, and there'll be a boss, and you have to scratch out the whole boss, and when you do, you say, done, and everybody stops. So it's a real-time game, but going fast isn't, getting to the boss first isn't necessarily the way to win the game. So whoever knocks out the boss gets 4 points. And then you kind of add up your points. You pass your board to the right, and everybody tallies up. And that's kind of the idea. And, you know, you have to decide with your group, like, how picky are we going to be? If I, you know, obviously if I leave half of an orc exposed or goblin or whatever, that's going to be a no-go. But if I just leave, like, a little part or the marker didn't work so well, you know, so you kind of have to decide in your group what's going to be acceptable, what's not going to be acceptable, I think. So everybody's having fun. Knowing the expectations there will be important. But yeah, it's just a lot of fun. Oh, when you get to the artifact room, there's like they're numbered 1 through 6 or 1 through 9. I think there's even a 1 through 12, and you have to like connect 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, whatever it is. And then in addition to that, they add another layer, which is you get a character, you get a class. So you might be a cleric or a wizard or a barbarian, and they all have special abilities. The wizard, well, they know how to cast spells, so they just run through the spell, put a little circle, and keep moving. And the barbarian only has to scratch out the heads of enemies because they behead them, which I think is great. You get those little extra things. And then there are 10 maps in the box. So there's 4 copies each. So you can play with 4 players. There isn't really a solo mode because the whole thing is to compete against, somebody else. Like you could both decide we're going to play for a really long time and get a lot of points, or it could be short. So there isn't really like a high score thing. Like a lot of other games, it's just who decides to do what and what you gain. But some of the later ones, then there's tokens that you put out and there's little, orbs, and you have to, you know, scrawl out the crystal ball, and then you grab the orb, and it's worth points. If you grab it first, you get more points. And there's keys, and you have to find the keys so you can unlock the door, so you get a little more of the maze element. And there's portals! Yay, portal! And you have to go in the portal and then go teleport to some other part of the map and keep going. So it definitely keeps you on your toes. I am noticing playing the first 2 maps a lot with people teaching them that that's getting a little bit older for me. This game's a blast. I love this game. This is the perfect filler. When people are like, oh, I don't know, we should play. I only have a few minutes. Great, I got the game for you. You could teach it. You play it fast. And that's a good thing in this case. I'm not always a fan of the you can teach it and play it fast kind of idea. But yeah, that is that. All right, what's up next here? Woo, I got a lot of games to review. All right, Cascadia. So this is from Flat Out Games. And this is a really cool tile drafting, tile placing game, and these other tokens. So Cascadia, you're in the Cascade Mountains, which is the Northwest Pacific area of America, and it rolls up into like Vancouver in Canada and all that kind of area. And so you've got animals. You've got hawks and bears and moose and salmon and foxes are the 5 different animals, and they each have like 4 different scoring cards, so you shuffle up and play with them. They also give you a starter set. Also, they give you a family card where you just put it out and they all score the same, so you can kind of get the mechanisms of doing the game down with your family and then add in the unique scoring, which was perfect. That was such a great idea, a simple way to do that. You know, it sounds boring to people to some extent. It sounds boring to me strategically because I want the different things to think about. But, you know, with kids and families and stuff, you might not want that. So, boom, they give you a card. It's in the box. Easy to work with. So what's happening here is you're going to have, like, 3 tile, like a little 3-hexagon shape in front of you. And you and they're going to have symbols on them of the different animals. You get kind of a starter tile. And then on your turn, there's 4 tiles with 4 chips. And the chips have the various, you know, they're like wooden poker chips. I don't even know what you would call those. Discs? I guess they're discs. And you will take those and you will draft. So you'll say, oh, I want this hexagon tile, which goes with this disc. And then you add the hexagon to your board. And it can go any way you want, but you're trying to make the largest terrain in each type. So generally you want it to match. so you can get those bonus points. And then each of the tiles has the symbols, and some have multiple animals on them, and you take that little disc and you place it on one of those spaces. And you cover that space. What's really clever is that that means you always have three open spaces, because you're drafting, you're adding another hex, I guess technically four, and then you place, unless you start with a disc. I can't remember, I apologize. But you've got open spaces and everything, and then you're adding it in. And then what's neat is, like, some of the spaces will give you a pine cone, because there'll be, like, only one animal on it. But if you cover it, you get a little pine cone or a little leaf. And you can spend that to draft any pair. Let me take this hexagon and this animal. So you can do that kind of thing, which was a really good idea. So it gives people that option. Otherwise, you get a point if you keep those at the end of the game. But it's very clear whether you want to use those or not. If it ends up that there's like three animals of the same type or all four, you can wipe that and put new animals out. So you have lots of options. It never really backs you into a corner. And then at the end of the game, you're going to score based on those. So salmon want to be like in a straight line. And bears might want to be grouped up, or foxes want to be adjacent to other animals. Maybe bears are the ones that want to be alone. Like, they want to be alone and surrounded by other animals. And then all the hawks are like in some kind of linear pattern where they're distant from each other, but in line with each other. So it's almost like they're flying. I don't know. It's really neat how they did all that. It's a great game. I'm imagining that if you're listening to this, you've heard of Cascadia, maybe had a chance to play, but definitely check that one out. Because it's really good. That is Cascadia, also from AEG, also a review copy. So thank you to them. All right, what else we got here? Equinox. So Equinox is a game from Plan B Games. Again, another one they gave me at Gen Con. Got a chance to play this. This is a Reiner Knizia game. And it is a re-implementation. I think the game is called Titan's Arena. I used to play a game called Titan from Avalon Hill all the time. And so I think that's why I remember this, but I don't remember exactly what this implements. There are two different box covers. I have the pink one here. There's also a green one. And it is confirmed that they are the same game. They just made two box covers. So you don't have to worry for the reasoning there. 40 to 60 minutes, 2 to 5 players. And this is a very interesting game. I don't know if I can explain it well. But basically, you've got a big tableau out there. And all these animals are competing in this competition on one of the equinoxes, the vernal or autumnal equinox, and you shuffle and you play with a certain number of creatures. So I think there's 14 in the game, and you play with 8 of them, so there's lots of options. And then you make a big grid, and players have tokens that they can kind of bid on who they think is going to win and be in the end of the game. And you're playing 5 rounds, and each round there's an animal that's eliminated. And then in the last round, there'll be 3 animals left, and those animals will score points. Because, yeah, each of the 5 rounds, you eliminate 1 of the 8, so there's 3 left, and those animals score points. And you get points based on how early you bid on the fact that they would still be there. Ooh, I did a good job explaining that part of it. How you actually play the game is very interesting. You're putting cards out in those spots, and they have abilities, but you only trigger the ability if you previously have bid on them, or specifically you have the highest bid. So let me make that a little clearer. The earlier you bid, the more points it's going to be worth, and then you have control. So sometimes you're bidding just to have control so you can trigger the special abilities. The special abilities aren't game-changing. They can be good, but it might be like remove one animal or whatever it is. And then all the animals are like 0 to 10, 0 to 0 to 9. And what's happening is once the row is complete, all 8 animals have been placed, the one with the lowest number will be eliminated. But you can play over animals. There's also a chameleon that's wild, and there's some trees that add other abilities. Yeah, this is where my explanation is just breaking down a little bit. If I had it physically in front of you and we were able to run around, it makes a lot of sense. But it's also one of those games where you get to the end and you go, oh, I should have bid on that earlier. Oh, that one would have made sense. Anyway, then you fill your hand back up to a certain number of cards. I think it's based on the number of players. And one of the other things you can do is you can discard cards of animals that are out. If they're out of the competition, they've been eliminated, you can discard those cards and refill your hand. The game will also end if that deck of cards runs out. So that's kind of what's happening there. And yeah, my front loaded explanation with the how you win, I think, was pretty good. But on the back end, there's several more little tricks to that. But it actually plays pretty fast. And it's very clever. It's extremely clever. It's almost too clever. Like, it looks like it's going to be a family game, and there's just a lot. Although I have to say, some of the random things that happen, so, like, Zephyr was playing with us, and she's 11, so it's not like she's a kid, you know, and she makes silly moves, but if she didn't make the perfect move, or one of us didn't make, like, the expected move, it kind of, like, threw a wrench, and then it was like, oh, well, now this is highly valued. So it was kind of interesting. Like, it felt like you could do that. Like, you didn't have to do the expected thing always, and whatnot. So, yeah. That is Equinox. Pretty fun game. I mean, it's a re-implementation of a game that was already printed, so obviously people liked it, and they just gave it a really nice package. Oh, I should mention the artwork is just absolutely gorgeous. Really, really nice pictures of forest animals and creatures, you know, both real and mythical creatures, and they did a really good job with that. So, well done. Check out Equinox from Plan B. All right, you can check out a play of The Loop on our channel. I did a solo two-player. I didn't actually do the solo game. Not the world's biggest solo player, and using all those solo rules is not always my favorite. I don't have a problem with it, but so I did a playthrough of The Loop as though I was two characters. The Loop is a cooperative game from Pandasaurus Games, from Maxine Ramborg and Theo Riviere, with art by Simon Caruso. I'm just kind of looking at the box here. And so what is happening in The Loop is a cooperative game where you are trying to stop Dr. Foe from messing with the timeline. There are 7 time periods from the dawn of time to the end of time, and you are trying to stop him by completing 4 missions. Yeah, 4 missions before he sets up 3 vortex, like a 4th vortex, and creates a whole rift in time and all that kind of thing. So what's actually happening is you got a little deck build action selection thing going on. And so on your turn, you're going to add more of these clones. So he's putting all these clones of himself in various places, and you want to return those clones to their actual timeline, and that eliminates them. They're off the board then. You're drawing a card. You've got one of each of the 7 sections. You draw a card, and then you turn this little shoot or dice tower, cube tower, and it can shoot out in 3 directions, so it can hit that one or the adjacent ones. And you're dropping cubes based on the number of clones that are there. And they're going to reach these locations, and they add rift cubes. And if you ever get 4 rift cubes in a section, that section goes into a vortex. And that one is uncontrollable. You can't complete a mission there anymore. If you get 4 vortexes, you lose. But if you complete 4 missions, you win. So then when you get to your turn... Oh, you also add more clones to the board. When you get to your turn, you get to take actions. You have a free move to move to an adjacent space. And then you have 3 cards that you draw off your deck, and everything's kind of played face up in front of you, and you can exhaust those cards to do what they say. And those cards run the gamut from move anywhere to remove a cube, and you've got all these energy cubes that are on the board, these green energy cubes, and you can spend those to move, or you can spend them to loop. So when you loop, the cards that you have in your deck have symbols on top, and you can spend an energy, and you can reset or unexhaust all cards with the same symbol. So building a deck with the same symbol will allow you to loop more, and you can loop a second time, but it costs 2, and a third time in the same turn. On future turns, it only costs 1. So many of your missions are like, do a loop in Dr. Foe's area, where he is this turn, or place energy in each of the locations, because cards might let you place energy, and pushing clones to eliminate them. There's all these different things you're trying to do and complete the missions. And yeah, then it just becomes a race. What's interesting is you have those 7 cards. So you start to know where he's going to show up, and you protect those areas. And then it resets to a second round and then a third round where he adds more clones. And you kind of lose information for a little bit. But then it's like, oh, he's not going to green or yellow or blue. So let's protect these other ones and not worry about those as much. And your characters have special abilities, so you can play with different characters. It's a really tough game. And I almost won on the stream, and I played with Brian a couple times at Gen Con. We did not win, but I did win with Kathy. And when you win, it's just you're triggering a lot of things, and those loops can do really well for you. And it becomes a lot thinkier than you'd expect it would be. It's not really complex. It's just thinky, like, oh, if I do this, and then I move, and then I do that. There's just so many iterations of what you can do, permutations, if you will. And you're trying to figure out the right one to maximize and then have those unknowns of what he's going to add. So it has a whole bunch of modules. I played one of the modules on the stream, and that was fun with the super clones. So it gives you lots of different ways to play. I think this one's going to be a pretty big hit. It's got really kind of cool artwork, kind of cartoony, zany artwork. It's much more of like a Euro-style pandemic game than it is goofy, like it sounds, with the loop and Dr. Foe and all that stuff. It's much more in the strategy game than the goofy party game style. But yeah, it's a fun game. I think, what does that give me? Four and a solo play five. I think I played five games of it, so I still find it fun. So that was The Loop from Pandasaurus Games. All right, we keep going. I'll just get through as many games as I can. So this next one is probably one of my Game of the Year contenders. So spoiler, this is Anno 1800 from Cosmo. Thank you to Cosmo for sending this over. Pretty much all the games I'm reviewing were sent over to me. And Anno 1800 is a Martin Wallace game. I got a chance to play this at Gen Con, then they sent the copy over, and I've played several times now. It's real good. I like this game a lot. It is based on an Ubisoft video game called Anno 1800. Sorry, I'm not into video games really that much anymore. Maybe if you asked me about Nintendo right now, I'd be okay. But I don't know this one. But essentially, the theme of the game is you have a bunch of workers in the 1800s and you are trying to make them happy. So they want things. They want canned food and sausages and coffee and whiskey and I don't think it's whiskey, I think it's vodka and beer and they want coats and finer things, eventually engines, and you're kind of building up. So you've got a big board of all these, we'll call them technologies, even though some of them are just boat sails and glasses and things like that. And you've got all these out in front of you, and you've got a big hand of cards. And the game ends when somebody gets rid of all the workers in their hand. I believe you start with nine cards in your hand, and if you get rid of all your cards, that will end the game, and then you'll count up your points from there, and the workers are worth points. Every time you complete a worker by giving them those resources, you put them on the table, and then you can trigger their special ability at any time, which many of them say you get another worker. So now you add more workers, and you draw another card, and you've got workers on your player board in front of you. So your player board has kind of workers by color, which is kind of the style of work that they do. And you've got green, blue, red, purple, and turquoise workers. And the turquoise workers are the investors. So they don't really do work, they just kind of help you get the more expensive things. Yeah, the art, Maurice is commenting here on. No, the Pandasaurus game art is good. I like that too. Thank you for that comment. Yeah, no, the art is neat. You can check it out, watch the playthrough on Step Into the Portal, or if you go back and watch the podcast live here, you can see some of that. So in Anno 1800, on your turn, you're going to be able to do, there's a bunch of different actions, but essentially you're either going to play one of those workers, one of your cards in front of you by moving the workers to those items. So you've got all these things in front of you on your player board, and you say, oh, I'm going to spend coal and I'm going to spend iron, and now I can play this person and I get this bonus. And then eventually you'll be getting the tiles and they're on this common board, and you might say, oh, I'll spend these two and I'll take that tile and now I have that resource. You're not going to be able to get all the resources, so you are forced to trade. So at the bottom of your board, you have boats and a harbor. The harbor allows you to make like level one boats, which give you one action each, and then you can upgrade to level two and three harbors, which lets you make the bigger boats, giving you two and three. And you've got two actions on there. You've got an explore action where you actually can go get more boards to add to your player board, or go to the new world and get resources that you need for that high level technology that only you can use, as well as some cards and other things. Or you have the trade ones, and the trade ones allow you to spend them and be like, oh, I don't make canned food, but you do, so I'm going to trade. You get a gold, and I get to use your resource temporarily this turn. You don't get it, you just get it temporarily so you can satisfy one of your workers. And trading's a big part of the game. What can you do with the gold? Well, the gold lets you reset. So one of your actions is to take all of your little worker cubes and put them back where they go, which you're going to need to do eventually because spaces are limited, resources are limited. Sorry, I lost track of the thought. But the gold allows you to temporarily put a worker back. Like, ooh, I really need the sails for ships so I can make a lot of ships this turn, so I'm going to pay to put those back. And that's kind of the idea. Also, when you do the reset, you get all those tokens back on your boats. And so that's what you're doing. You're just expanding, I guess, kind of like a civilization, right? These technologies and these things are almost what you have. But it's pretty snappy. Like, people are not taking long turns. It's a lot of turns you're rifling through. And then it's got just a common set of cards that say, this is how you're going to score points at the end of the game for gathering these resources or having these things. Somebody will eventually trigger it. The person who triggers it gets 7 points. and people get one more turn, and you go through. It's pretty long. Like, you're playing a, you know, two-player game in an hour and 15, hour and a half. You're playing a three- and four-player game in 2 hours, maybe a little over two. We played four with Larry, Brian, Kathy, and I, and we knocked it out at VonnerCon in, like, under 2 hours. So that went pretty well. Yeah, I mean, the first time you play, it's definitely going to be a bit of a longer game. And it's pretty dry. Like, you're just getting these resources, but, man, it's just, like, I think that snappiness of it, it just makes it feel like it's like a Splendor or a Century Spice Road, just longer with a bigger arc, right? So it's just kind of got that feel where it's like, oh, this isn't actually that confusing. At first, it feels like there's a lot of rules. It feels like there's a bunch of actions because I didn't name some of the actions. But those actions are like, you know, you're going to take them a couple times per game or once per game. You can, like, put cards back and draw new cards so you can complete those and other things like that. So, yeah, it's a really great game. I see BB House Rodent commenting on that here, and yeah, I enjoy the game a lot. Yeah, and Maurice is commenting too, is just saying that it just because it's a big engine build, so you're waiting to get all those things, and finally somebody gets it, and then you're trading with them, and all of a sudden it takes off, and the end always comes sooner than you expect, even though you're an hour and a half, 2 hours into the game. And then you add up all your points, and there's lots of points, and you're scoring, you know, somewhere around 100 points, and the leader tends to be 120, and people behind are like, you know, 80 to 90 points, so you're in that kind of point range. But it's a blast. I mean, I'm on, I don't know, fourth play, fifth play, something, and I just grab it. Let's go. I'm ready. Fun game. 2 to 4 players, doesn't have a solo mode that I know of. Yep. So that is not in there. All right, I want to talk about Gen Con and VonnerCon, so I am going to pause on talking about games. I will tell you, other games I have here are Whirling Witchcraft and Furnace, which is another Game of the Year contender. Furnace is really good. And I have the Enchanters Deluxe Box, which so far has been a game that I really enjoy, but people I teach it to are like, that's fun. But there's a lot in there, so I will get to do some reviews of those on the next episode with Carl. So that should be good. So let me run through a little bit with Gen Con and VonnerCon. This is just going to be a brief overview. Gen Con was obviously very different this year. If you go on the channel, you can see my unboxing, my haul of all the games that I got, and I had to fly all those back, so it wasn't too many games in, compared to previous years, but 10, 12 games I was given by publishers, and I'm super appreciative of all those for all that. So that was really nice of them. So we got there, we went out, we were there Wednesday through Saturday. We came back a day early so that we could be back, kind of COVID test, and I had to get back to school. So we wanted to make sure everything was good. But we're there, I was able to hang out on Wednesday and see Dice Tower people and work Capstone booth, help them set up and do a bunch of stuff. And then we went to an event with Dice Tower, and then we went over to the game night. We got to play Whirling Witchcraft at AEG, which I'm going to review. And that was really fun. We also played Tranquility at Lucky Duck. I checked out, is it called Wonder Tree? Wonder Book is a game coming out as well. And that company's slipping my name. But I saw a bunch of those. So that was neat. And then the show hit. And it was definitely very popular. It was big. The people were buying a lot of games. Arcane Wonders seemed like a very popular booth. Renegade was a popular booth. And there was a lot of new stuff there. The Hunger, the Transformers game. Arcane Wonders had Picture Perfect, the Aquatica expansion, and Furnace, and those were all selling really well. Capstone, I demoed Juicy Fruits, Rift Force, and Rorschach to a whole bunch of people. They were also showing off the newest Winsome Train game, Iberian Rails, Iberian Gauge, right, is theirs. There's a Rails and a Gauge. And that was very popular, so we had a lot of people there. And that was really neat. So I didn't end up really purchasing a lot. I purchased Furnace, and then I was given all these games. And that's kind of what we were doing. I saw Isaac Childress, who I've seen at a lot of conventions. He came over and demoed Juicy Fruits with me. His booth for Frosthaven was right across the way. And I got to hang out with him a lot, talk with him a lot. And actually, one of the later nights, he invited Brian and I to play Gaia Project with him, because that's like his all-time favorite game, and it's top three. It's my third. Gloomhaven is in front of it, which kind of laughed. But that was a blast to just kind of sit quietly in a hotel. All these other people are out partying. We're just there playing Gaia Project with Isaac Childress. He's the designer of Gloomhaven, owns Cephalofair Games. So that was a really neat thing to do. Definitely a memorable experience, for sure. And he told us about some other game that we're going to play at PAX Unplugged in December. So he's going to bring that. We'll hopefully get a chance to play that. So that should be exciting. Yeah, that was mostly what we did. Then I'm trying to think of what we played after. Oh, we saw Tom from Cosmos. So we got to play Anno 1800. We got to play the new Crew, which is great. Like, they did exactly what they should do with the new Crew game. Kind of give you that next layer, but not give you too much or not change it too much. So that's definitely worth checking out. And I'm most excited for The Adventures of Robin Hood, which still hasn't come out. And they unfortunately weren't able to send me a copy. But this, I think, is the most innovative game of 2021. So in Robin Hood, you have like a little book and, you're reading through a story, and then it reminds me of an advent calendar. Like, you pop things out of the board and new things appear. Then you can actually flip things over and other things appear, and you're all throughout Nottingham with the castle and the woods and Sherwood Forest, and all that kind of stuff. And, yeah, really neat game. Lots of reading to go with that. So, you know, if that's not necessarily your thing, it could be a little bit different. It's a cooperative game. I'm not sure how well those components will hold up over lots and lots of plays, but again, if I play through the whole story, the book's like 200 pages of reading, so there's a lot there. I found it incredibly engaging. You know, is it heavily strategic? No. It has a pretty innovative move mechanic where you have these different, like, size pieces or almost like little rulers that you put together, and you can move your figures there. So I think Brian was Robin Hood and I was Little John. There's also Maid Marian and... I don't think it was Friar Tuck. So there was somebody else. Maybe it was Friar Tuck. That would be the next one that jumps into my brain from those stories, but not really sure. So we got a chance to do that one of the evenings. And let's see. Let me just run down my list here to see. Oh, Rift Force is great. Little two-player game. Actually, I should review that. Do I have that up here? I should have done that. And... that is a majority of what we played there. I think there are a few others. I wish I had Brian because he tracked a little bit more of what we played, and I did not track what we played. Yeah, we got to play a bunch of stuff, and Gen Con was good, and everybody was safe, masked up, which was great. And we were able to get back and get back to things. So it was nice to just kind of have this kind of chill Gen Con. I feel like people probably heard a lot with Gen Con. So then I turned 40. And so for my 40th birthday, I had a few people come over. We kind of spaced it out over several days and just had kind of smaller groups at a time. I usually do a big VonnerCon, open the floodgates, everybody's invited, here we go. And this one I kept a little bit smaller. We didn't do it at all last year. I did an online one where I just did it via Zoom. A lot of party games for one day. But this one we did over a series of days. So I got to play a lot there. It's a little fresher in my brain, so I know the Gen Con stuff. I faded on a little bit. I thought Gen Con was great. I was super happy to be there. I did not want to go. It was like midweek, and I was like, I don't think I want to do this. And once I got there, I really had a blast. I obviously enjoyed Gen Con every year. It was just weird with all the timing and the changes, but it actually worked out really well, and it was good to see everybody. So, all right. So, then people came over for VonnerCon. The first night, we played Mysterium and Word Slam, and that was really fun to play a big old game of Mysterium. That's kind of been a staple one that we've played at every VonnerCon. So that was kind of like the party game night. And then on Saturday, we had people come over. I played Furnace in the morning. I don't have my list in exact order here. But I got a chance to play Furnace, which I will review. We played a whole bunch of So Clover, which is a really... it's by the same people that made Just One, I believe. And it is a party game where you've got like this four-leaf clover and everybody's gathering words. It's hard to explain, huh? And basically you're given two words. And you have to give a clue to the team so that they can get your words, but everybody's doing it simultaneously. So you've got like four groups of two words, and you're trying to give a clue. Like, what puts rodent and Ghostbusters together? And then you're trying to come up with like some ghosty rodent clue, which I can't think of off the top of my head. But you try to do that, and then you pull all those cards off, and they're like kind of four-sided, and you shuffle another card in, and then as a group, they have to figure out which cards did you have. It's really neat. It's really creative. It's definitely in that, like, simple and well done in that fact that everybody's kind of playing simultaneously, and then the whole group is thinking, and you're just waiting during yours. It's another one where, like, I don't play with the points. I have no idea what the points are. It's just fun to kind of play. Then we played... what did we play after that? We played Raccoon Tycoon, which that was one that I've been trying to get off the table for a while. And that's, was that Forbidden Games? Off the table? On the table for a while. And it turned out great. Like, it's just a big auctioning game. I obviously love raccoons. There's Rocket right over my shoulder here. And another one that Rachel made me back here. So yeah, it's just a really fun, like, engine building, basic, you know, economic market management game. And then it's just got bidding and auctioning. So you're just trying to get money and you're trying to get resources. You can play a card to get resources, increase the value of things, then you can spend them for whatever they're worth, and that drops the market. And then you can buy at various locations, and then you can auction off the railroads to be able to get those. And then there's some buildings you can buy. And I ended up getting the building that was like every time there's an auction, I get $5, and people just auction. I got a ton of money, and that pushed me over the top to be able to win by buying a whole bunch of buildings. So that was neat. Let's see, what else did we play? Then I think we finished up the night with Glenmore 2. I feel like there's another game in there. We played Soul Clover for a while, but I can't remember else was in the middle. Either way. And played Glenmore 2, and that was really fun. I had played it once before, and it kind of felt a little underwhelming, but then this game felt good. Like, I was like, okay, cool, and I wanted to add more modules and see where it went, and there were interesting decisions. The people had been added. I had played Glenmore, and they added, like, a whole personage track, and I was like, oh, like, bored, and that felt weird to me the first time, but this time it felt totally sensible. Just, here's a bunch of special powers you can get. But Glenmore 2 is, like, a circular track where you can move as far forward as you want, and you draft a tile, but then everybody else gets to go who's behind you. So if you jump too far forward, they get a whole bunch of turns. So that was definitely neat and fun to play. And then I also played... I played Underwater Cities the first day. So I played Underwater Cities the first day, and I ended with Gaia Project. And those are just two of my favorite heavy Euro games. They're so good. So that was fun, and I won both of them. So that was neat. Also played Elysium. And on Sunday, I had another group of people, played The Hunger first. Eric Sommer had a copy, so we played The Hunger, and that was really cool. I'm not going to do a review because I don't have a copy, and I've only played once. I felt bad. I tried to push my luck too much. It's a Richard Garfield game. It feels a lot like Clank, but then plays different from Clank, is the best way I can say that quickly. But I tried to push my luck too far and ended up being a vampire that died, and then Eric won by default because we're just playing two-player. But that was neat. Then we played Scooby-Doo Escape from the Haunted House, and this was hilarious because we wanted to play this game. Crystal Dax had told us that it was really fun. This is from the OP, and so we had people we gathered around, and then you got a booklet, and Eric took the booklet and started reading the opening, and Eric is a professional voice actor and audiobook reader, and he just, woo, everything went silent. Everybody just staring at him, and then people just threw their books at him like, you can just read everything. I ended up trying to do a couple ooby-dooby-doos right, with Shaggy, but I just didn't compare. But I'm willing to try doing some acting and whatnot. But yeah, it wasn't there. But then it was really fun. We ended up playing both sections, and it took us about 3.5 hours or a few pauses in the middle. But there's chapter 1 and chapter 2. It's got a nice break, and you can come back to it. You can put everything away. But we played the whole thing because we had the group together. The gang was there. And it just played out exactly like a Scooby-Doo story. It was interesting. You can kind of place your movers, which you have the various characters, and the characters can do certain things. So Scooby can sniff, and Shaggy can eat, and somebody else can investigate, and use, I think, is what Daphne does. And so it's kind of interesting going through all those. So, it feels like an escape room, but it's kind of got a heavy story to it. Which I don't know. Again, I love that Adventures of Robin Hood. I don't know the story to Escape Room always there, but Scooby-Doo story was good, and it really got me excited to play the Goonies one that I think they're making. So that should be exciting. So we played that, then we played a whole bunch more Soul Clover, and then we played Paint the Roses, which is a game on Kickstarter now, I believe, from North Star Games. And it's like a deduction game. You literally have like those old school deduction, like, oh, well, Sally can't sit next to Percy. And then you cross out that box and put a dot and figure out all the deduction. And you are painting the roses in the garden for the Red Queen before she... Queen of Hearts. Before she gets upset and, off with their heads or whatever. You are the cards trying to do that. And so you have to get all this deduction while she chases you around. You have to fill the whole garden. If you fill the garden, she's satisfied and she won't cut your head off while you paint the roses and get them the right color. So Yeah, that was a neat game. Again, not one that I'm going to review because I just played that. Actually, I played that one twice, but you can check that out, though. It's on Kickstarter. And then, like I said, I finished the night with Gaia Project, which is what I'm trying to finish all BonnerCons with. But obviously, depending on the crowd that's there, I'm not going to make people who don't want to play Gaia Project play Gaia Project, but it was another phenomenal game because I really liked that one a whole bunch. And that was kind of the recap of all of those things. Yeah, so a couple things here. So BB House Rodent says that he heard from somebody who played with us that Scooby Dooby Doo was amazing. Yeah, no, it was really fun. The length, even the 3.5 hours, sounds long, but we were pretty much invested. There was a lot of choices. Playing with 4 and even 5 people sometimes made the decisions too long. Like, it was kind of like we were waiting for 3 people to agree. And if you're just playing with 2 people, it would have been like, well, I think this, and you don't have an idea, so let's do it. And almost most things worked out. But yeah, I mean, if you like Scooby-Doo and you generally enjoy escape room to style games, this isn't heavy on the puzzle and escape room. There were a few things that I thought were a little like, ooh, that's tricky and that, but whatever. And the clue system was not good, but you could get through most things by figuring it out or guessing. You have Scooby snacks, and if you're wrong or you take hints, you eat Scooby snacks and you kind of get a score, but you have like 20 of them, and I think we used 2. So you could have used way more to get yourself through. There are just a couple weird puzzles, but they worked out fine. The puzzles weren't the big part. It was like reading the story and thinking about what you would do, and then, oh, that makes sense, and doing the next thing, more than like just figure out the puzzle like an exit game, which I love the exit games and I love the puzzles, but it just felt on the other side. It felt like I'm trying to get through a story and figure out what happens and kind of think like the characters would think, and that's what made it really fun. So, yes, it was very good. I don't know if anybody else has questions for me. Steve from Beat the Game says, I look like a gangster, I guess, with my hat on. Yeah, it's very cold in my attic right now, so I went with the New England look. I know up in Canada, you guys just go naked year-round, even in the snow. But I guess in New England, we're weak, so we grow beards, wear flannel and hats, and all that. And Daniel Craig just says, hi. Hi, Daniel. All right, I think I'm going to end the episode here. I will give people a minute who are live with me if they have any other questions they want to ask me, board game related or otherwise. But we will otherwise wrap it up. So you can see if there's anything else there. While I wait for them to see if they have any questions, I will let you know the next episode should be with Carl Van Ostrand, so that should be really exciting. We're going to review a bunch of games and then talk about specifically Bardwood Grove, since that's on Kickstarter, local designer, so I definitely want to promote that for him and check out some of his game. We'll talk about some of his other games as well. So that should be a fun episode, so you can look for that one coming out a week or so after this one drops. Yeah, going forward, I will review more of these games. I've still got piles of games to do. You can go over to the channel. I'm really getting into My Hero Academia. Figured out how to do live plays with people who are remote. So we've been doing live plays. Steve is here from Beat the Game. Oh, thank you, BB House Run. Thanks for watching. Yeah, it's fun to be live, and it's fun to have people here. I don't know, for people listening to the podcast, it might be annoying. Like, oh, he's just going over to those people. But I just think it's fun to try and do that so you can check it out sometime when I do those episodes. But yeah, so I've been playing Marvel Champions live with Steve and with Brian. They're both up in Canada, and we've been able to do that and play live on nights Marvel Champions, and then also playing My Hero Academia card game with Larry. We've done some of that. We've also just went into the store and played, but it was fun to be able to stream some of that for people. It's not the highest quality that's around there, but I think we're pretty engaging and entertaining. So I think it's fun. And again, being live, if you're really into those games, I know Daniel is one who is super into Marvel Champions, so you're able to watch that. And there's a growing community for sure around our store with My Hero Academia, which I just think is awesome. And I am in deep with that game, so that's been a lot of fun under the CCG. I'm really discovering how much I like Euros and card games. Those are really the two that are rising to the top for me. So I like cards, and there's just a lot of things to read and go through. All right, it does not look like there's any questions from everybody who's joining me live, so I will make that the end of this episode. Thank you, everybody, for joining me for episode 172. Who's scruffy looking? Of the Portal Gaming Podcast. My name is Grant. Until next time, I hope you step